Well, well, friends, welcome back. Thanks for tuning in once again. On this episode, I got to speak with Rudy Koch, the co-founder and chief business officer of Emberlight. Emberlight is a Web3 infrastructure provider specializing in platform services that sit at the intersection of games and fintech. They currently have two products that are aimed at simplifying onboarding for game developers into Web3 while providing deep fintech tools that assist developers in integrating and deploying tokenized game economies while improving monetization and liquidity. Rudy has been making games for over 20 years on some of the biggest titles in the industry. Rudy's worked on titles such as Club Penguin, the Call of Duty series, Skylanders, and even World of Warcraft. In 2018, he founded Mythical Games, which was an early pioneer in the Web3 space and one of the sector's first unicorns. After Mythical, Rudy spent time in the United Arab Emirates building a new venture and using his expertise in Web3 to advise government regulators, Web3 startups, VCs, and members of the UAE royal family. And once again, I had a great conversation with Rudy. I'm telling you, people, I don't know how I keep getting great people. I like to believe the law of attraction is an action. I'm just looking for wonderful people who have an interest in talking to me. But I'd be lying if I said it was just law of attraction, because I do consistently spam people on LinkedIn and Twitter and kind of anywhere I can get a hold of people. The amount of projects I go to and under their contact us tab, I have my little spiel about the podcast and who I'd like to speak to someone. I'm always amazed how much that yields results, but I'm always happy it does because there must be something working. And the more episodes we make and the more you people listen and rate and support us, it's just great for us, you know? So please keep doing that. Please keep being a part of us and continue to have a passion for Web3 gaming, just like I and everyone I've gotten to talk to on this podcast does. It's truly awesome to see a bunch of gamers come together and just talk and really spread all the cool, wonderful things going on in the space, which I'll never fully be able to capture, but I'll do my best to capture with the wonderful people I continue to talk to and support my wonderful audience that is you. So whether you're listening in the car, whether you're listening through your earbuds on a walk, at the gym, you know, maybe just running through the grocery store right now, or even listening on your work commute, you are truly what makes Web3 gaming great and what makes this podcast continue to spin. Look, every podcaster has to make this ask, but it helps us so much when you rate us on any platform you listen to your podcast, Spotify, Google, Apple. You don't understand how much that helps us. Leave a review. I would love to start reading reviews on the show in the beginning show notes, but I haven't gotten any yet. You know, I get star ratings, but nobody leaves a typed up review. And that would just be something awesome for me to start doing as a part of the show. I would also love for you to reach out to me at theweb3gamer@proton.me. That is THEWEB, the number 3, GAMER, at proton.me. That's the best way to get a hold of us. Additionally, you can find me on LinkedIn and Twitter. That's where I'm most active. Feel free to shoot me a message on there, tag me in something. Just reach out, you know, don't be a stranger. Additionally, if you really love the show and want to support us in the best sense, we have a Patreon, which you can subscribe to for as little as a dollar just to show your support. $1 a month? I don't think that's too much to ask. And every dollar counts with hosting fees, finding guests, all the upkeep and stuff that I am happy to do. But, you know, it would make me feel great having people support me, for sure. Additionally, if you just want to buy me a cup of tea or coffee or maybe just a nice snack, I will put my Cash App in the show notes for every episode from now on, and you can donate whatever you want. Heck, donate a penny, I'll take it. But, you know, if you give me $3 to $5, it helps me get a nice cup of joe. So anything's appreciated. Thank you so much. My name is Matthew, and I'm the Web3 Gamer. We'll be right back.
This podcast is brought to you by a big old hunk of ham. Look, if you got tam, you need ham. And if that don't make sense to you, then you ain't worthy of eating a big old hunk of ham. You can dice it, boil it, stew it, saute it, put it on a sandwich, put it in a salad. Look, it's a big old hunk of ham. You just do what you want.
Ham. Hello, hello, friends and gamers. My name is Matthew Simone. I'm the Web3 Gamer, and I'm here with Rudy Koch, the co-founder of Emberlight. Rudy, how's it going?
Hey, Matthew. Good. How are you? Thanks for having me.
No complaints. No complaints, man. How? Where are you calling in from? Myself, I am down in the Atlanta area of Georgia.
I am in sunny Seattle, and I say sunny because it's been bright and sunny here. And all my friends down in California have been seeing a lot of rain. So
that's hilarious. Considering it's usually the opposite of that. I have not been to Seattle in about 10 or so years, but I like the rain. So when I visited, I liked how gray and rainy it was. And I was just like, you know, I like this as a visitor. Maybe I lived in it for a certain amount of months a year. I'd get tired of it, but I don't think I would. I like that whole area is beautiful to me. I loved the parks up there when I was up there.
Yeah. Yeah, it's beautiful up here. You know, it's funny because anytime I travel anywhere, if it rains, people are like, oh, you brought the weather. So someone obviously traveled from Seattle to SoCal in the last few weeks and took it all because it's sunny over here.
Right. Well, and we could argue California could always do with a little more rain. So, you know, as much as they maybe want to complain about it, it's good for them in the long run, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Well, and so, you know, I'll jump right in. You have a wide array of your journey has been a great one, so to speak. So I mean, you know, you've had a big career in the gaming industry and just the traditional gaming. As far as I understand, you've worked with you know, titles like Club Penguin, Call of Duty, Skylanders, World of Warcraft, you know, or people at your studio have worked on those games or franchise as well. I'm curious, are there any highlights or challenges you faced during those projects that you felt really, whether you worked in Web3 or not, really helped develop your character and your career?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. It's impossible to work on brands like that and not have them impact you on an incredibly meaningful level. You know, Club Penguin was sort of the first, you know, my first foray into the game industry, and it was at Disney. Club Penguin was a pioneer at the time in free to play and some of these mechanics that, you know, over the next sort of 10, 20 years, we learned would be incredibly popular within the industry. But also I think that they prepped an entire generation for Web3. It was very much item driven economy. It was, you know, a virtual online world where your identity mattered. You know, these are things that, you know, we now associate with Web3. And so, you know, that now in retrospect, it's amazing to think about how far ahead Club Penguin was of its time. From there, you know, going to Activision, you know, working on Call of Duty, you know, it's a game that I played and I was a fan of. So it was amazing to be on such a big, you know, title that had such a huge impact globally, right? And, you know, that was like boot camp. I was part of 5 Call of Duty launches, you know, and that's like climbing Mount Everest every year. You get to the top and for a split second, you go, what on earth did I just do? And then you go, hey, let's do it again, right? So, you know, amazing to be part of that. And then Blizzard after that, you know, World of Warcraft. You know, I've been a diehard fan of Blizzard. I was just telling someone the other day that I sent them my resume when I was like 12. I was like, I want to work for you guys, you know. And so what was it? I think it was like 20 years later, I ended up working on World of Warcraft, which, you know, if you think what could possibly be bigger than Call of Duty, well, World of Warcraft was a cultural phenomenon. And what was also interesting about Blizzard and World of Warcraft was it really did prep me for blockchain, I feel, because of the type of economy and gray markets that surrounded World of Warcraft over the last, you know, 20 years or so, right? So, you know, it really did prep me for blockchain. And it's funny because, you know, Vitalik and others sort of reference World of Warcraft as an inspiration for why Ethereum exists. And, you know, it's and so being like in the belly of the beast, so to speak, I got to see all of that through a different lens, right? And so that was, I think, one of probably the thing that prepped me the most for going down the blockchain rabbit hole.
Well, yeah, and what I love about all that is that it's been really nice to see, like, there's you and a multitude of other people I've talked to have had like these extensive careers in like the traditional gaming sector. And then when Web3 started coming on the radar, it seems for a lot of people, they were like, well, no brainer. This makes sense. This is like a lot of things like gamers and we ourselves as developers, creators have already been used to, just in a sense of it's stuck inside the unique game ecosystem or you know, market. Like it's cool. There's complete value in there. And like, I always think about it with World of Warcraft. I'm like, I used to know people who, you know, they would grind and farm and get extensive items. And then the way they'd make real money off is like, well, I just sell that account to somebody and it has all the things linked to the account. And I was like, well, it's still cool to think about. And that back then I was like, the fact that, you know, I just spend time playing video games because they're fun. If somebody was like, you can make money off it, I was like, that's crazy, dude. Like, you know, yeah. Let alone now the age of Twitch even. But yeah, I think it's interesting. Yeah. Like you said, and so I'm wondering, what made you, like, what inspired you to transition from that traditional gaming to the Web3 gaming? And, you know, you already noted on some experiences with, like, your traditional gaming titles that influenced that. But what really led you to finally be like, I want to take this jump. I want to explore this realm, this atmosphere.
Yeah, I mean, you did a nice segue there. You know, we've had this concept, you know, of buying and selling digital items in the gaming industry for a long time. I mean, I was grinding a game called Asheron's Call back in the late 90s, and I was going on eBay and selling my stuff, and then you'd have for real money, and then you'd go back in game and stand by a tree and wait for the buyer to come along, right? And so we've had this idea for a long time. It's been massively inefficient, you know, and it's not a good user experience. It's not, you know, designed nicely into the game experience. So it's janky, you know, there's lots of fraud. You don't know really what you're getting yourself into because it's not sanctioned by the developers and it's all outside of the ecosystem. So, but it's still been a massive part of the industry. You know, every game that's had some meaningful success out there has had some kind of gray market around it, right? And so, you know, when blockchain came around and I started looking at it, yeah, it was a no-brainer. It was like, oh, wow, and here's a tech that could allow us to harness that potential and potentially so much more. And so, you know, yes, we strive to, you know, we strive to be a business first in the gaming industry, but we're also creative at heart. And so when a new technology comes around and challenges us, you know, it's always really exciting. And at the same time, you know, as I was looking at blockchain, I started to meet some incredibly inspiring people like Gabby from YGG was the first person I ever met in the Web3 space. You know, Benny over at Dapper and, you know, the guys at Polygon, you know, OpenSea, we were all starting out at the same time. I remember running into the Axie guys at a conference before they even came up with Axie, right? And so it was very inspiring to be around that. You know, these are obviously have gone on to do incredible things in the space and really move the needle forward. And I got to sort of be there with them at the beginning and, you know, look at it through my lens while, you know, hearing how they thought about it. And so it was instantly an exciting area for me. And, you know, it was literally 2 weeks I left Blizzard and dove headfirst. For better or for worse, I dove headfirst into it.
Well, yeah. And so obviously that was a big risk for you because at that point you'd had, you know, a number of years industry experience in the gaming industry and you were kind of, there was a lot of excitement around it and a lot of people who, as you saw and as I've seen, but you saw then passionately involved in it and wanting to make things happen. And so I guess I'm just wondering, was there any point once you made that jump that you maybe, I don't want to say backpedal, you second guessed, you're like, maybe this wasn't the best decision? Or were you always feeling like you're like, look, I've got enough experience in traditional gaming. If this doesn't work out, I can always go back and just go back if things don't work out, you know?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. You know, like I had no worry that, you know, if things went belly up, I could go back in the industry and just keep doing what I was doing. That wasn't the issue. But I was, you know, from day one, I was convinced that this was something. You know, I had been through a lot of evolution in my career in games. I'd seen a lot, right? Like mobile gaming didn't really exist. And then suddenly, you know, I mean, we had Java Brew mobile games, but that wasn't really mass market. And then suddenly smartphones came about and changed everything, right? We had, I was playing games when it wasn't normal to have games connected to the internet, right? And then now even single player games are connected to the internet and you don't even think about it, right? So I've seen a lot of evolution. And, for me, when I saw blockchain, I could see that, okay, this was one of those once every 10, 20 years opportunity that could really shake up the industry. The scary part was how, right? Like, how is this going to play out over the next 5-10 years? You know, and that we were, you know, as I went deeper down the rabbit hole, especially leaving Blizzard and founding, my first startup, Mythical Games, you start to peel away the onion, so to speak, and you start to realize, oh, there's a lot of complexity here, right? This is brand new, you know, terrain. No one's ever sort of solved some of these problems that we're facing. And that was the scary part, because it's like, well, how do you navigate that?
Yeah, and that's fair. And maybe we can get into some of that with, you know, I'm sure a lot of those you dealt with at Mythical Games, because correct me if I'm wrong, you founded Mythical Games in 2018, one of the early pioneers in the Web3 gaming space, arguably one of the sector's first unicorns. And I'm wondering, what was the vision behind that, if anything different than what we already discussed? And, you know, how did you approach those challenges of being an early adopter in that space? Like you were talking about, some of those issues that, you know, how do we solve this? No one's ever solved them before.
Yeah. So 2018, April 2018 was when I registered the company. And, you know, CryptoKitties in late 2017 had just blown up. You know, the concept of NFTs had just sort of come about. People were trying to wrap their heads around it. Now, there were other innovators in the space, you know, before Dapper, you know, and had sort of been experimenting with this stuff. But CryptoKitties really put it on the map for everyone, right? And so, you know, it literally had just sort of exploded. So when we got into the space, there really wasn't anything there. There was three blockchains to choose from: Ethereum, Tron, and then I registered the company a month before EOS mainnet launched, right? So there was really nothing. ERC-721 had just been created. You know, like, it was brand new, completely open field, right? Which is exciting and interesting, but also like terrifying, because where do you start, right? We've learned over the years that there's so much more to it than what we had imagined. And so as a early pioneer, you're basically the canary in the coal mine. You don't know how deep the coal mine goes, right? You just kind of go, this is going to be really important, but we need to now start going down this rabbit hole and we need to start figuring out what are all the pieces, right? And that's the tough part. And it wasn't just a technical challenge, right? It wasn't just, hey, here's some new interesting tech. There was also a whole, you know, and we know even today, a whole challenge around regulations. I remember in 2019 having to pitch our use case to all 50 state regulators in the US to make sure, hey, we, you know, now that we've got real world value attached, are we thinking about this right? You know, and, you know, that was something you just never dealt with in games typically. So there was a lot of nuances that we had to deal with that we didn't know until we got there. Culturally as well, you know, like for me, when I think about Bitcoin and crypto and blockchain, it's not just a technological advancement, it's cultural. It's a way of thinking, how we think about ownership of digital items, right? Like, that is what, in my opinion, is the coolest part about it. But it's a philosophy that then has to match up with where the technology and the regulations are going. And that's where the challenges start to sort of unravel. And that's where it becomes really difficult. So at first, super exciting, right? You know, it's a wide open field. But then, you know, as we went into it, you realize how complex it was.
Yeah. And I think that's like a recurring theme I've met with a lot of entrepreneurs when this starts, is they're like, it's so much fun. And then they get into, they're like, oh, the tax laws. Oh, the regulations. Oh, you know, keeping our users safe, making sure we're not prone to attacks or threats. And you're just like, they're like none of the fun stuff that you wanted to think about until somebody asks a question and someone else goes, well, how are we going to solve that? And you're like, I don't know. I guess we got to figure that out now. Right. And so I can't imagine, especially at that level, but it is interesting too, to see that, so many people, like, cause I feel like I remember seeing people on Twitter talking about for a while, like even up until before they started being like, yes, you need to start reporting like crypto on your taxes. People being like, so when I sell this NFT and make money, is this illegal? And people are like, just don't worry about it. And I was like, you can't participate in the American monetary system, at least, and not worry about that. Eventually, at some point, it comes down. Yeah. But yeah, you were definitely in it, I would argue, like kind of that tail end of the Wild West of where just like you could, I mean, as you saw multiple times, people could just come in, raise, you know, a couple hundred thousand or a million and then just dip. And nobody ever, they were like, well, that sucks. I lost some money, but nothing ever happens of it. You know, we didn't have really like blockchain forensics back then. We didn't have law firms dedicated to literally just chasing down that person on your behalf to figure that company and figuring these things out. So those are the things I always thought about would be scary, especially, you know, I don't know if Emberlight, you know, was venture capital funded, and you have to worry about, you know, when you have shareholders, people invested in your company and you lose their money and they go, what happened? And you go, I don't know. Nobody really knows. It's this new thing. It's like, they're like, well, that's not good enough. We're very upset about it. So that was something I always thought would be really, really hard to deal with. But it sounds like as those questions and issues popped up, you know, you would kind of look around the industry and try to find the best expert to navigate, or like you were saying, you know, take it upon yourself to pitch why and how you were going to do it to the best of, you know, your ability within the current laws at that time, willing to kind of negotiate, be like, and if the laws change, we're happy to, you know, acclimate to those. We're not saying we're not going to follow the laws and regulations as they appear.
Yeah, I think the challenges were, you know, I mean, the beauty of it was, you know, I was coming in with a ton of experience making games, right? Traditional games. And so that really helped a lot, you know, in because I was looking at these new paradigms through a lens of, you know, 15 years of making games already. And so I was looking at how do these apply to what I know to be best practices in traditional games, right? The challenge arose when those two worlds sort of collided and conflicted, right? So you talked about protecting consumers. That's a great example, right? If you have true ownership, that means, you know, a purchase of an NFT is final. It's immutable. It's mine. That's the beauty of Bitcoin. No one can duplicate it. No one can take it away from you. It's all managed by the network, right? And validated by the network. Now, how does then that then impact customer service or potential fraud or bad actors, right? If someone, you know, hacks an account or fraudulently purchases an NFT with a stolen credit card, should you be allowed to claw that back? Or does that break the paradigm of true ownership, right? Like, and of course, you know, from a consumer perspective and regulatory perspective, you have to protect consumers, right? People playing games, you know, aren't looking to get ripped off. It's not appropriate. It's not part of, it shouldn't be part of the experience. So there was a lot of these kind of sort of web two, web three. It wasn't just a perfect synergy where you're like, ah, this is how it fits and off we go, right? There was a lot of push and pull and clashing between these two worlds, right? And what I, you know, what I feel, and, you know, you say that we, you know, it was the early Wild West. I would still argue that we're still somewhat in the Wild West, right? You know, I mean, FTX just happened last year. That's about Wild West as you can get.
Right? Yeah, definitely.
And I think, unfortunately, there's still a lot of, you know, scams that are, you know, out there hurting the industry, people pumping their, you know, numbers and faking their transaction volume, chasing, you know, the higher value token, you know, that they can sell, you know, like, unfortunately, that's part of it. And, you know, we've had to deal with, you know, that as we think about how do we put mass market products out to consumers. How do we manage these kind of things? And so what I expect is as we continue to evolve, this clashing of Web 2 and Web 3 is sort of going to spawn new paradigms and new thought process and new ways of doing things that aren't maybe entirely Web 2, but also aren't sort of like super deep crypto Web 3, because it just doesn't work, right? So we're still in it, you know, we're still in that, on that journey, and there's lots of incredible innovators out there, you know, pushing the needle forward. So, you know, I'm excited to see how this all unfolds, and I really love being part of it.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I mean, not to get off topic, but one of my favorite things I always hear related to Bitcoin in the industry is how no one disagrees about stacking sats, and no one disagrees about getting Bitcoin. But what you'll constantly hear is people who have to go through the bad experience, so they're like, well, I'm going to invest in this meme coin or this altcoin, and when it skyrockets, I'm going to sell and then put it in Bitcoin. And then it doesn't go that way. And they're like, I should have just bought Bitcoin.
Yes.
And it sucks. People have to learn that experience the hard way. But I'm sure, you know, there have been, you know, actually, curiously enough, do you feel like there were any lessons that you all dealt with at Emberlight Games where you thought the plan you had was going to work out, and then it ended up, you know, not backfiring, but kind of like it went a totally sideways and you kind of had to learn something the hard way? Is there anything that immediately comes to mind with that?
Yeah, I think you're asking about Mythical Games, not Emberlight, right?
Mythical Games, sorry, yes.
Okay. You know, I mean, that's a startup in a nutshell. Is things don't always go the way you expect it, whether it's Web3 or not. But, you know, I mean, we thought regulations would be figured out by now, right? Like, we thought there would be, I mean, there was no clarity 5 years ago. And you'd think, well, 5 years later, you know, I remember, you know, like, we'd be in interviews. When do you think Web3 is going to become mainstream? And we were all optimistic. Oh, 2021. Oh, okay, maybe 2022. You know, like, not 2023. You know, so we were all optimistic. But I think, you know, we were surprised to see that some of these things have taken a long time. And I think the challenge here is that Web3 has real world value, right? And real world value throws a dimension into that. Like AI, for example, we've seen it skyrocket over the last little while. And it doesn't face that same challenge, right? No one's doing pump and dumps with AI, or if they are, I mean, amazing. Kudos to them. But, you know, it's just not AI is just not a technology that's associated with sort of creating real world value that you can like cash out on, right? So, you know, I think that's made Web3 a lot more of a complex adoption cycle, and it hasn't gone as fast as we'd hoped. And so that creates challenges, right? Who are you building Web3 products for, right? The aspiration is obviously mainstream mass market, but there are challenges with that, right? We, you know, a lot of the technology over the last 5 years has been very crypto focused. You think about doing things like staking and delegating and these kind of things that are commonplace, you know, they are very crypto. You have to know and speak that world to be able to do those things. You can't expect the average gamer to be comfortable with that. And then you add the extra dimension, like I said, of regulations being unclear. It's made it difficult for this industry to really find its footing. So, you know, and then, of course, as I mentioned, you know, 2023, we got a lot of bad press, and that seemed to reinforce consumer sentiment about NFTs and Web3 that wasn't fun to deal with, right? And so, you know, while I am still very bullish on Web3, I'm very bullish that this is going to play in a critical role, not just in games, but across multiple sectors. I think we just sort of ran into more complexity than we anticipated. And, you know, then it becomes an issue of how do you ensure your startup can survive through all of that, right? Like, you are not on a linear path, growth path. You're not going, I have to build this, I have to get in front of this many users, and then I've got revenue and profit, right? You are navigating complexity on so many different fronts, and you're kind of at the mercy of how the market shakes out, right? There's no way we had planned for Terra Luna to happen in our roadmap, right? But that changed and impacted the industry. So, you know, it's just those are the things that have been, I think, challenging, but also why I love the space so much, right? Like, I mean, it's really an exciting, interesting space to be a part of.
Yeah. So then, you know, what is really the company's mission at Emberlight, and how is it trying to position itself at the intersection of Web3 gaming and fintech?
Yeah. So, I mean, Emberlite is my new venture, you know, taking all the learnings and successes from the last 5 years and, you know, starting a new venture that I believe is going to play a really critical role in the next 5 years. And, you know, a couple of things that I've seen that has really inspired the direction for Emberlite, you know, is around the complexity that we've been talking about. You know, when you come, I said, you know, in 2018, when I registered Mythical Games, there was 3 blockchains. I think now we're like over 50 chains, right? We've got dozens and dozens of wallets. We've got marketplace. I mean, there's been incredible innovation in this space. And we're seeing new tech and infrastructure coming online regularly. We saw the, Mistin and Aptos break away from Facebook and become sort of a new breed of blockchain. That's really exciting, right? But while this is all really innovative and exciting, it also has created a ton of fragmentation in the market. So you think about being a game developer or a content creator or someone who just wants to build a Web3 product, and you've never dealt with Web3 before. Where do you even start, right? Where do you even start in terms of trying to navigate all of this? Game developers, I can say, aren't equipped to evaluate this kind of thing. They're not. And so what they, you know, and so it'd be like saying, okay, you know, Web2 game developers, in order to build your game, you have to go and evaluate 20, you know, KYC providers. And it's like, what, you know, like, where do we even start with that? We don't have the vocabulary. So how do we start even evaluating blockchains? How do we evaluate wallets and oracles? And how do we do airdrops and on-chain analytics? I mean, the rabbit hole goes quite deep, right? And most people, most developers think, okay, well, once I've got a chain, that's it. But then they realize, oh, there's a massive cost to all the rest, right? So our goal at Emberlite, in a nutshell, is to simplify Web3, the complexity of Web3, not just in terms from the technical side, right? But also the monetization side. There's a lot of complex concepts like staking and rewards, like node validation, decentralization. These we have shown that over the last 5 years, they're incredibly good at building community, creating retention, their fun mechanics, the crypto crowd really resonates, right? But how do we open this up so that mainstream users can access them? You can't, like I said, you can't expect them to go to a dashboard and link their wallets. It's just beyond them, right? So our goal is to simplify all this through tech for developers to be able to integrate and create a clear path for themselves to be able to build Web3 products. Because until we sort of simplify or consolidate this sort of fragmented market, it's too much of a risk for the good developers. The developers look at the space and go, it's already risky putting out a game. Now I have to deal with all this uncertainty. How do I even, you know, how, what do I, you know, how do I get comfortable? Not everybody's gonna wanna go and pitch to 50 state regulators, right? They just don't have the time or the bandwidth, right? So yeah, we built technology. We built a couple of pieces of technology. One we're calling the Pollinate SDK, which is essentially an aggregator. It's an aggregator of all the tech pieces out there, the tech providers out there that we think are the best of the best. We're not sort of integrating with all of them, but what we think are the best of the best. And what we do is basically we provide the SDK to developers and say, hey, you integrate this into Unreal and you get access to all of these chains. You get access to these wallets. And we've basically done the due diligence for you. We've compiled the sort of the full stack. We've got the oracles. We've got the on-chain analytics. We've got UA. We've got all the pieces that you would need. You know, we've even built in a lot of Web2 stuff as well, you know, like inventory management and CMS, you know, because we want you basically to be empowered to come into Web3 and feel like you're not going to go down this road and realize, oh, there's all this other stuff I need that I didn't even realize. I'm never going to launch a game. But on top of that, what we've built, and this is the fintech stuff, is we've built a lot of tools to help, A, to be able to deploy, you know, tokenized economies, manage tokenized economies, but also to integrate seamlessly more of the complex monetization concepts like staking rewards. I can get into detail about how we do that, but, you know, that in a nutshell is what we're doing. There's a lot of science in fintech and in finance when it comes to sort of dealing with financial markets. And what I noticed and what I learned over the last 5 years is that they're doing things that we can just take and apply to Web3 games. And doing so, we can simplify the path for developers.
Well, and I think that's an important thing because I feel like what's more and more common, and you would know this far better than I do, this is just my observation from talking to people like yourself, is there is a, maybe not a plethora, but there's a good amount of people who understand the traditional, you know, non-Web3 gaming world and want to jump in, and all the things your company is offering, they're like, don't understand a lick of it, don't know where to start, but we can build a quality game and we understand everything related to that. And so it sounds like it's the perfect blend for those types of people or those companies or creators, because that's exactly where they need the assistance, where they need the help. And it's not, since you all have done what sounds like the majority of the heavy lifting, it's almost like an easier ramp up for them to get in, so to speak, whereas maybe they don't have to understand, maybe if they understand the terminology, it makes it easier, but maybe they don't even have to go that far. They just need to know, like, this does that within our, you know, within, I think you said your SDK is for Unreal, correct?
Unreal, yeah, Unity.
Yeah. Okay, so it can go with both. Yeah, just being able to understand how, you know, how the SDK works in there, and that's as much as you need to worry about. Like, we can handle the rest. So I'm not sure if that's like kind of what y'all are trying to do, if it's like an advisement as well, being like, somebody's like, well, I want to integrate, as you were talking about, like, I want to integrate maybe more a unique type of staking or more staking into my game. Like, I don't even know where to start with that. I'm guessing like your company offers advisement in that sense too, of like, well, your game's this type, it can work, we've seen it work with these types of games, or maybe it's better to think about this rather than like a staking for your type of game, you know?
Yeah, I'll give you an example of what we mean. So we've built tech, for example, that allows for developers to integrate with. We have announced this, actually a first integration with an incredible game team called Revolving Games that are building Web3 game products. These guys are from traditional Web2. They're backed by Dan Houser, who's a legend in the space, you know, like, they are bringing their expertise from traditional games into Web3. And we're working with them on some of these more complex problems. So naturally, yes, because they're complex and they're new, we have to help advise, because we need to collaborate in sort of making sure that this is executed and designed correctly. You know, over time, we believe that it'll just become a no-brainer and people will know. But for the time being, because it's a new concept, advising and helping teams figure these things out is important. But ultimately for us, the business is the tech. And so imagine a use case where you have a racing game, right? And players buy or have a garage. That's an NFT, right? And it's a garage where they can store cars. And when they buy that garage, they're actually buying a node on a decentralized network. And that node starts to mine the game token, maybe at a very, very, very slow rate. And then the developers can go in and set all kinds of custom rules around it that impact the mining algorithm. So, for example, they could say, let's, you know, the more cars you buy and store in the garage, the faster that mining algorithm goes. The higher you are on the leaderboard, the more time you log in a week, the more achievements you've achieved. Like, any behavior they want to incentivize, they can tie to that rewards algorithm. Mm-hmm. And that will impact the rate at which players generate rewards. Now, we've essentially integrated through a very simple SDK. We've allowed that developer to integrate staking and rewards, but to the player, they're just buying a garage and they're putting cars in a garage, which is a game experience. And it's a game experience we've had for a long time in Web2 as well. So it's very familiar, right? Mm-hmm. But you can also expand that to, let's say, a guild hall. And a guild hall, we've added, you know, fractional ownership to it. So a guild can own a guild hall together, and they can contribute resources, whatever the game design is, they can contribute resources to that guild hall, and that impacts the rate of rewards for the whole guild. And as a fractional owner of the guild hall, you get rewards as well. You know, and so again, what we've done here is we've taken the concept of node ownership and delegation, which is typically something you have to go to a website to do and to delegate, and then, you know, it's not a user-friendly process. But now we've put it in terms of a game experience or a player experience, where you're part of a guild, which is a very normal game experience, and you own a guild hall together, right? So our mission is to really use our expertise from fintech, you know, what my co-founder comes from that world, and gaming, to really, you know, provide ways for developers to integrate and layer these kind of complex things. So I say stake and rewards and node validation and delegation, but, you know, we're going to keep going down that path of what are these complex things that have been proven to be great for building community and retention that only Web3 can do. Let's make it really easy for developers to integrate.
Yeah, and I think that's exactly what is needed right now for a lot of these other people who want to get involved and literally don't know where to start. And I think too, it gets a little complicated for some people because, you know, I had a guest forever ago, probably like we're talking 15, 16 episodes ago, that all he ever works on is in-game economies. Right. And, you know, I'm not going to pretend I know anything about in-game economies. I've played games with in-game economies, but I knew nothing of developing them. And to his credit, he has two legitimate college degrees in economics and very deeply understands economics in an in-game system. And he's like, what people don't understand is you're still creating an economy that needs to work and function and be fair. And not be out of play. And he's like, there's a reason you'll see games who will not hire someone who understands in-game economies and essentially have a broken system versus somebody who understands how to make a proper in-game economy. He's like, and then it becomes balanced for the players, especially when you take into account things of being like, well, you can have high versus low selling seasons for items or when things are in demand. Raven Quest is one I think of where that's kind of like pixel-esque Final Fantasy in a way. And like they'll have things that go through where if there starts to be an in-game demand for an item, if you happen to have a plot of land and you can mine it, you could just sell it back to the market and make more in-game currency for something you're already creating. But it depends on the high or low of the season of what's in demand for the players. And so what I'm getting at is I wonder, you know, do Emberlight Solutions assist developers in integrating and deploying these tokenized game economies? And what are the benefits of these economies for developers and players?
Yeah, so, you know, you've nailed it on the head. I mean, these are complex, concepts. You cannot just sort of YOLO an economy out the door, which is what I've been seeing, right? People who may be really experienced with games come in and say, well, how hard can the economy be? I already know how to put out great games. And then they get into it and they realize, oh, wow, this is a real, you know, this is a beast in and of itself. And, you know, in games, you know, Web 2, we've become good at designing for closed inflationary economies, right? Free-to-play economies, right? And we've sort of developed a whole talent pool we call product managers. That's their skill set. That's their bread and butter. Web 3, however, introduced concepts that are far more complex. You know, designing for a closed, you know, inflationary economy is very different than designing for this open, tokenized economy that, you know, value can go across exchanges. We're dealing with market makers, volatility. You know, these are things that we've just never dealt with. Now, you look at people from finance and people with, you know, who come from an economics background, you know, and quants, you know, these are roles that we haven't had in games. You know, but in financial markets, that's their bread and butter. You know, it's designing for peer-to-peer transactions, two-sided marketplaces, you know, managing around volatility and market makers. These are all sort of table stakes for people from that world, you know. And so, you know, that's where my co-founder comes from. He's, you know, formerly CTO for, you know, large investment banks like Credit Suisse and Goldman and Merrill. And he, you know, was also transitioned into algo trading. He was head of algo trading and prop trading for these large investment banks. And so he sits at that incredible intersection of sort of computational sciences and finance. And in that world, they know this stuff inside out. They do it in their sleeves. And so what we need to do as an industry and what we hope to do as Emberlight is sort of fuse these two worlds together. We need to bring that expertise in. We need to empower developers with the tools and to think about token economies and game economies as something that needs the thought and expertise, the same level of thought and expertise and go to market than a game would. And you cannot just tack it on, or you cannot just go with what you know in Web 2. Sure, that's a great starting point, but we've learned over the last 5 years, it's much more complex than that. And so that's why we feel like not only simplifying and aggregating the technology stack is important, but simplifying the implementation of these more complex Web3 paradigms is key to unlocking the barriers that are preventing game developers from coming in. Because we really need now to start seeing great content hit the market. It's so critical. And so we need to create a path for that.
Well, and then let me ask too, so then is it a possibility with your company, let's say somebody comes in, they're like, exactly what you're talking about. They're like, I already know how to make a great game, but I'm willing to admit, like, I know nothing about making an in-game economy. That's what I need help with, as well as all this other onboarding stuff. Is that something your company can offer to help them with? Or is it something more so you're like, we can't really like help you fully create or develop that in-game economy. And like, we have somebody you can outsource to, I guess would be, it'd probably be a better way to ask.
Yeah. I mean, it's a bit of both, right? I mean, okay. we are at that point in the market where people need help. They need direction. They need advice, you know, and we've got a team of, you know, incredibly smart people from the finance world who have designed economies, you know, incredibly complex economies, right? And, you know, we can bring them in and deploy them to assist, right? Because the bear market also, as bad as it was, has sort of forced everyone to really think pragmatically and go, okay, I have limited resources. I have limited time. I cannot possibly do everything. I need to recognize where I need support. And, you know, as a function of just where we are, we have to support and help design where necessary. Otherwise, there's no market, right? Otherwise, who are we selling? You know, who are we going to sell our tech to? So part of that is just making sure that we're helping teams go out and be successful, because their success means our success. And, you know, but at the same time, we've worked with other teams as well, as other teams who do that. And, you know, we're happy to collaborate. You know, our core business is the tech. And so we've collaborated with teams who do econ design. There's a bunch out there that are great. So it's not one or the other. It's not an all or nothing. You know, we one of the things that I love about Web3 is how incredibly collaborative it is. I've never seen this in the gaming industry before, how willing everyone is to sort of join forces. And I think it's one of the best parts about being part of this incredible community. And so, you know, part of aggregating all the tech and part of the SDK that we're building that is supporting all these great tech providers and being able to go to teams that want to build in Web3 and say, here are the guys you need to work with. Here are the ones that have been pioneering and innovating and have built amazing tech. And we're going to save you time on having to go find them all and potentially find the wrong one. if you land on the pump and dump, right, by accident, mm-hmm. That's bad for business. We're going to help you with all that. But what that means is we get to link arms with all the great innovators in the space. And together, I think this is how we push the whole industry forward.
Well, yeah, and having that trusted verifier, I think, helps a lot of people who are skeptical and want to get into Web3 but don't know where to start. It's like, well, you know, again, like you said, you're like, as a company, you know, everyone we work with, like, we vetted. Like, we're not working with anybody that we think are even capable of doing pump and dumps. Like, that's not, either we've been around too long, we're too old, we're just, it's not fun. Nobody wants to deal with that, you know? But I guess also too, it's like, you know, with these in-game economies too, you know, they have to deal with a lot of either improving or maintaining monetization. And then also liquidity is a big thing. And I know, I'm sure you've seen with the poorly launched Web3 games, they're like, oh, our liquidity will be what people invest, because they're not going to want to sell. They're going to want to stick around. That'll be our liquidity. And they don't really create a liquidity for their game or company. So then obviously when things go south and everybody sells, there is no liquidity and things really go south really fast. And so yes. I'm wondering, you know, one of Emberlight's goals sounds like it's to improve monetization and liquidity for developers. Can you elaborate on the strategies and tools that you all provide to achieve this?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, again, this is an example of things that are sort of science in the world of trading and market making. You know, in financial markets, these kind of, you know, creating markets, creating liquidity is part of what they do day to day, right? We've just never had to deal with it in games. And so what we want to do is we want to avoid sort of reinventing the wheel, because it's already been solved in finance. But B, we also want to make sure that it's not just a blind spot or a gap for people. And I think a lot of people think that if you just put out a great product, you know, liquidity will just magically happen. And that is not the case. And that's certainly not how they operate in financial markets. And so, you know, for us, the tools and the, you know, that we provide, and even sort of the go-to-market strategy around these tools of deploying tokens, you know, we want to get away from YOLOing as much as possible, right? In a bull run, sure, you can get away with it, maybe, but we see the same thing over and over again, which is you launch and the token crashes, and then the game is just struggling to manage the value or the game team is struggling to manage the value rather than building a great game. And so, you know, a lot of our tools are centered around things like what we call pre-live ops, which is before the token even hits the market and goes on public exchanges, how do we seed this with the community? How do we build community and manage the value? Because as soon as you put it on exchanges, you somewhat lose control, right? And so we believe that there's a whole set of, and then again, when you look at financial markets, this is how they do it, where you get to sort of seed the market with liquidity. You get to test and optimize your sinks and faucets that are designed around algorithms rather than just, hey, I'm going to do a regular payout no matter what. I mean, you end up with a Ponzi scheme at that point, right? So, you know, there's a lot of things that we've built into our tool chest that allow us to sort of do this in a much more, I guess, scientific way and sustainable way. But, you know, I think that, you know, we want to treat the tokenized economies as a product in and of themselves, right? Like, they should have the care and attention in terms of going to market. It shouldn't be, like I said, just an afterthought. Oh, we've got a game. And by the way, this economy, let's throw the economy out the door and see what happens. But we're thinking about it in line with how the game goes to market and how the players and the community play into going to market with this stuff. You know, I think also the other thing just on liquidity is that I think the fragmented market hurts us. You know, you've got liquidity that's sort of siloed on different ecosystems, right? That don't talk to each other. And so you're like, well, do I build here because they have a bunch of users, or here if they have a bunch of users? What about these 10 wallets? They all have users. But every integration for a developer costs money, right? And so what? Are they going to go and integrate with all 10 wallets? And what if one of them disappears, right? Like, it happens, right? So there's a lot of challenges there. What we want to do is we want to give developers access to all of that liquidity, right? Without the risks, without the costs of integration, without the risks of the, you know, integrating with the wrong ones. And we want to try and sort of bring these this fragmented sort of silos of liquidity together, right? And so again, these are things that in financial markets are very normal. There are tools like smart order routers and stuff like that that can manage liquidity across multiple marketplaces and fragmented, you know, marketplaces, you know? So we're basically just taking these kind of concepts and just transplanting them. I mean, it's the beauty of it is they're proven already in a different industry. We're just applying them to games here. So we're excited and confident that, you know, what we're going to see as a result is, and what game teams are going to see, is they're going to see a growth opportunity for revenue as a result of this kind of thinking and these kind of tools.
Well, and so you discussed like a lot of challenges there. And so a lot of those, it sounds like Emberlight's actively working on or already, you know, has solutions for. And I'm wondering, are there bigger challenges that you see in Web3 gaming currently that Emberlight doesn't have a solution for, or that you don't think anyone has a solution for yet, and that you all are striving to hopefully eventually find a solution for?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, I'll say the regulatory landscape for sure. I mean, the challenge with the SEC is that they are implementing or looking at the problem from a crypto level, which is understandable, right? Like, it's understandable why they're doing that. The challenge for gaming is that it's a subset of crypto. And so we just get kind of kicked around. And what we need is for regulators like the SEC to really collaborate with subject matter experts and create clarity and a clear path for us, right? You know, and there's been amazing attempts of, you know, talking, you know, speaking to SEC. I've done talks with the former chairman of the SEC, you know, like we've all, are trying to help this along, but it really needs to be solved. I think also player sentiment, consumer sentiment, right? 2023, like I said, was not kind to us. And, you know, I'm feeling optimistic about 2024. The signals are really positive. But what we need now is we need these sort of scam companies, you know, that are just faking their transactions and pumping their token to kind of take the back seat and go away, right? And we need more legitimate projects to come in. We need to see some of the amazing legitimate projects that are already in the space. We need to see them succeed and, you know, become showcases of what's possible. And we need to be able to show mainstream the real value of Web3. I'd say the other thing too is that, you know, what I'm seeing and I'm hearing across the board is that, you know, investors are pulling back in terms of deploying capital in the space. A lot of teams that I talk to say they're having a hard time raising, you know, really great teams. And, you know, it's the challenge has been is the last 5 years has really sort of, created challenges for investors. How do they know what's a scam and what's not? How do they assess? How do they minimize risk that they invest into a team that's just going to cash out their tokens and make a run for the hills, right? So, you know, I think that sort of also put the investment community in a tough position. You've also got new shiny things like AI that have come out. And so, you know, I think 2023 was sort of a bit of a crater was created. And now we've got to sort of move these things. We've got to open up the investors again, show them value, show them where to invest, you know, to unlock the value here. And we've got to just be able to welcome more and more, get great teams into the space. And I'm convinced that, you know, out of all of this, I don't know when, in the next couple of years, we will start seeing hit games come out where people love playing these games. It doesn't feel like a crypto experience. A lot of the complexity is wrapped up and made palatable for players, you know? And once we start getting that, then I think what we do is start seeing more positive momentum on all fronts.
Yeah, and an interesting thing I've been seeing more and more in Web3 is kind of this hybrid approach where it's like the game can be completely played and enjoyed on its own without any of the blockchain aspects. But if you want to incorporate all the blockchain aspects, it's only meant to enhance the gameplay, your ability to integrate into the game, pretty much all that good jazz. And I know the main issue from talking to people has been the UX is getting better and better to the point where you don't realize you're interacting with a wallet or doing anything, but that has still been the major roadblock. I mean, it's funny to think about now because I'm so used to all that stuff, but even when like my brother was first showing me crypto and what a wallet is, and he's like, yeah, you take this receiving address and like you do that. And I'm like, this seems so complicated. Like, I don't get it. But then now understand, like, it's really not. It's just, it's a whole new learning curve to a standard or an industry you don't understand. So I can see how people are like, I want to play this game. And then they're like, anyways, you got to set up this wallet and you get to deposit like a little bit of funds in Matic or Polygon or whatever. And then people are like, you know what? I'll just not play the game versus being able to go, you can play the game. Don't worry about it. And then there's kind of like a window or a pop of like, by the way, if you want to enhance it, there's all these other cool things you can add in. And that seems to do really well for a lot of the companies better because then they're able to get people in who don't understand any of these things about blockchain and are just like, what is this stuff? And then slowly kind of integrate as well as get the people who are in both worlds who are like, this is awesome. Like, I just want to play the game. I also get to incorporate blockchain aspects into it, maybe eventually make money. I mean, I always think about that with Gods Unchained. It's so simple to get in and just play the game and never buy any packs. Like, if you're just playing the game and playing people, you can continue to stack cards and do really well. And then at a later time, if you decide you just want to sell your cards and be done, you can do that too. And I say that as a Magic the Gathering, longtime Magic the Gathering fan, and thinking about how, again, like you're talking about, there's all those economies around it. So when I first heard about like digital trading card games as NFTs, I was like, you know, something I never would have connected, but seeing it makes total sense now to me. And so I think it's interesting to see that hybrid approach going on where it's still really fun to play game. If you want to incorporate the blockchain aspects, cool. And I think that's a way that we're going to get a lot more people to want to come into Web3 is they're not going to realize they're already kind of in Web3, so to speak. As you said, it's going to be so, you know, the UX is going to have it so wrapped up well, you're not going to realize what you're doing. You're just going into the game to play, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm wondering from your perspective too, what key factors you think will drive users and developers to want to, you know, I guess we'll say developers first. What do you think is going to be key factors are going to want to make developers adopt Web3 tech into their projects?
Yeah, I mean, this is exactly where Emberlight sits, right? Like, we've got already a lot of great teams that are solving the wallet UX problems, the on-ramp, off-ramp problems. Like, we've got a lot of great teams solving that. What Emberlight hopes to do is to take some of the more complex monetization and you know, Web3 concepts and simplifying those for developers, giving them a clear path, right? A clear path, that's super important, right? We cannot have developers coming in and feeling like there's so much risk, it's not worth it, right? Maybe there's growth there in Web3, but how do we even begin to peel back that onion, right? So I think it's very critical that now there's a group of teams that are trying to solve the next layer of complexity and providing, you know, like you said, an experience where players are engaging with staking rewards, but really they're just playing a game. They own a guild hall. They own a garage. They're putting cars in a garage. Oh, look, that's staking, right? Like, we've got to make it that easy, you know, because what I think is going to move the needle forward is ultimately games that people have fun playing. That, more than anything, is going to move the needle forward. And the people who know how to make fun games, we need to create a clear path for them to feel like they can come into Web3 and they're not going to have the rug pulled from under them. They're not going to end up spending so much money picking the wrong ecosystem or integrating something that's too complex for players, right? Because then you're, you know, their concern is the game will be dead in the water. So I think the continued investment in infrastructure is important. Continued investment in UX is important. And I think our view on UX has to expand beyond just simplifying wallets and on-ramps, but it's got to be also delegation, no delegation, right? Like staking rewards, like more of these complex concepts need to be made palatable.
Well, and so would you say that's probably also core advice you would give developers who have not yet entered but are also looking to enter the Web3 space? Or would there be additional things you would give to them?
Yeah, yes, absolutely. I mean, I would tell game developers that, you know, it is a rabbit hole. You have to be careful of the landmines. You know, how do you protect yourself from a regulatory perspective? Because if you're a US company, you know, how do you navigate that? Which ecosystems are you integrating with? How are you thinking about all of that, right? And do you even have the budget to go down this rabbit hole, especially now that investment money has sort of clamped up, right? So, you know, it's interesting to be in a position where, you know, when I started Mythical back in 2018, I'd never dealt with Web3, but here I am now 5 years later, having gone through the gauntlet of Web3. And, you know, I think that, and to be honest, I encourage people to reach out, right? Like, we're a passionate community in Web3. We are all believers, and we know that this is going to be important to the industry. So, you know, I encourage Web2 folks who are interested and curious to just reach out and talk and have the conversations and talk about what they see as risk and what they see as challenges, because that also helps the teams in Web3 sort of navigate and focus their energy. And, you know, I think there's enough amazing teams in Web3 now that, you know, Web2 teams can come in the space cautiously and trust that there are great teams that will support them on multiple fronts when it comes to the risks that are presented.
No, and that's fair. And I would also agree with you. One of the reasons I felt confident enough to start this podcast is, for as many people as I spam to be on the podcast and don't get a response, what's nice is I'm honestly floored by how many people like yourself do actually get back to me and are like happy to be on it and talk about all these wonderful, interesting things. So I would totally agree with you that I feel like I'm honestly floored as somebody who doesn't have any sort of name or, you know, credentials in the space outside of my podcast, which has existed less than a year. Being able to just get to talk to people who have so much industry experience like yourself and have been around and can really explain these things for me and my listeners. And that makes me ask too, like, you know, so, you know, Emberlight is currently your main bread and butter, it sounds like, but is there anything you're looking towards for the horizon after this? Is there any other ventures or projects you're passionate about exploring in the future beyond Emberlight?
Yeah, I mean, I see myself being in Web3 for a long time. I think there's going to continue to be new problems that we're going to have to solve as we go through this. There's never been an end to it where I've seen where we've gone, okay, Web3 solved, let's move on to the next thing, right? And I don't think we're going to get that for a while, right? Which is great. I mean, it's a ton of fun being in this space and innovating with all the people in it, and taking on these challenges and solving them and sort of opening up the path for all those who hope to come into the space. For me, for Emberlight, we've got a bunch of announcements coming up. You know, we're hoping to get that all squared away for GDC around game teams. We've got some amazing game teams building on our tech already. We've got some incredible partnerships with tech providers who want to partner up with us that we think are the best of the best out there doing all kinds of stuff like wallets and chains and, you know, analytics. And, you know, we're just really excited to be announcing some of those. And then, you know, I'm a diehard fan of the space. I love all the innovation going on. I love talking about it. I love meeting people who are doing interesting things. And, you know, I'm going to be announcing some advisory positions that I'm taking on to help some of these teams in the space. And I'm really excited about some of the new up and coming teams that I think are going to make, a big splash in the space. So I'm all in. I'm all in, and I'm, you know, here to support, you know, the great community that's, helping pioneer this space.
Well, it sounds like we have some exciting collaborations and partnerships for Emberlight coming on the horizon. So people have to stay tuned for that, unless there's any you want or are allowed to announce now. But I understand if you totally can't.
I can. All I can say is just stay tuned to our social channels. You can hit me up on Telegram. I'm always love talking to the community.
Okay. Well, then I really only have two more questions for you. And I like to try to end the podcast on these because they're more fun. I like to think all the questions are fun, but these are more, you have more freedom, you know, than to answer with your industry knowledge. So, you know, what advice would you give? You know, I'm sure, as you know, there are a lot of people far younger than us who are wanting to get involved in this space and don't have any idea where to start. What's some advice you'd give them if they want to get started creating or just being involved with Web3 projects?
You know, if you're aspiring to be an entrepreneur, I would give anything to be young and starting my entrepreneur life. You know, I think the younger you are, the more risk you can take. You know, you can go head first in, and, you know, you learn by doing in the entrepreneur space. And I've met a lot of young entrepreneurs who just blow my mind and so brilliant, so exceptional. Some of those I'm going to be announcing some partnerships with soon. So, you know, I think, you know, get in there and make it happen. You know, talk to people, and put your vision out there, and, you know, get it, you know, inspire people to help you and work with you. I think that's critical. I think, you know, at the same time, you know, being realistic about the market, being really clear, you know, having a grand vision and ambition and energy and passion certainly is a critical thing, but also, you know, how do you build smart, right? I think a lot of the challenges over the last 5 years has been there just was too much capital in the space. You saw people, you know, and teams, any team could raise. I mean, any team, it's felt like at one point you just had to say you were working in crypto and people were just throwing money at you, right?
Like, yeah, completely.
And, you know, that's great. It inspired a whole ton of innovation, right? But it also made the industry lazy, in my opinion. A lot of teams I saw just burned through hundreds of millions of dollars with really not much to show. And then a bear market hit and they vanished, right? And so it doesn't matter what the climate is, it's be smart about how you build. And I do meet a lot of teams now as well who have been through the bear market, who are very conscious and very smart about how they're building and always pushing, you know, like, where do we focus our energy on? What can we be really good at? You know, we're really past that point now where you can try and do everything. It's just not possible. So, you know, having a dose of reality and being hyper aware of where the market is also really important.
Yeah. It sounds like the main things I'm getting from you is, be young, jump in, give it a shot, and don't try to do everything at once. Or at least if you do, try to have a self-awareness to figure out where your skill set is really aligned. You know, if you're really good at marketing, maybe try to find a path forward in marketing, versus if you're really good at developing, find a path forward there. Or business partnerships, collaborations. Don't try to do all of them if, you know, you'll be stretching yourself too thin to be really, really be any good to yourself to accomplish things that you're setting out to do, it sounds like.
And I think that also applies to startups, right? Like, you know, there was a trend of startups trying to do everything, build the chain, build the wallet, build the analytics, build the marketplace, build the on and off ramps, you know, like, because it didn't exist, right? But, you know, that is very, very tough. Every single one of those, you need to go deep on to do well. So even as a startup, as you look at the team and your expertise and what you can be really good at, you know, focus the team's energy on what you can really do better than anybody else.
No, fair and very good advice. Well, the last question I have for you is, it sounds like, you know, with your history in games that you have probably at one point, if not still, consider yourself a gamer. And I'm just curious, what were some of your favorite games growing up? or if you have any favorite ones currently.
Oh, I mean, this deserves a whole podcast in and of itself. I could take another hour, but I'll go quickly on it. You know, obviously I grew up when, well, not obviously, I know that I look really young, but I was around when the Nintendo first dropped and Super Mario became a massive phenomenon. You know, that was the highlight of my childhood. You know, and then later on, it was Blizzard games, you know, Warcraft 1 and 2 and StarCraft. I remember when StarCraft launched. It was a massive, massive deal, right? Today, you know, games, I'm a big, you know, I like survival games. Like Valheim is a game I love playing. Obviously, I got caught up in the PAL World hype and I played that nonstop since launch. I mean, brilliant, brilliant game. So yeah, I mean, I'm definitely a gamer and, I love playing games and I think have to be in this space.
I would agree. I would agree. That's part of the one reasons I started it is I was just like, I get to talk to people about games all day. That sounds pretty fun. Right. And that's so far, that's exactly what it's been. So, but I figured, it's rare you meet people in this, especially people who have one worked in the traditional gaming industry and created their own company that they're like, not really that into games, you know, be a weird place to be. And I'd be like, well, you're very successful for someone not very into games. Yeah. Well, is there anything we miss that you want to say in closing, Rudy?
No, other than, again, I say reach out. You know, I love talking to people in the space. If you got questions, don't hesitate. You know, Emberlight, hit our website, emberlight.group, and follow us through our social channels, or hit me up on Telegram at Rudy Koch. I love talking to the community. That's it.
Okay, cool. I'll make sure to have every way people can get a hold of you and Emberlight in the show notes. But Rudy, thank you so much for being here. Thanks so much for talking to us. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. That was a ton of fun.
Well, friends, that's another episode down. If you enjoyed this podcast, we would really appreciate you rating it on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, wherever you can rate and wherever you listen to and get your podcast. Would mean the world to us and help get this podcast to people who truly are involved in Web3 gaming, blockchain, and cryptocurrency and want to learn more and stay on top of these emerging technologies. If you have any queries, want to reach out about any collaborations or advertisements, as well as want to reach out with any improvements you think we could make on the podcast, please email us at theweb3gamer@proton.me. We would love to hear from you and take every response very seriously. Take care and keep gaming, my friends.